You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
The JSC has closed its doors for another day, so it's time for the 5 o'clock shadow. And as always on a Thursday, I speak to Viv Govender from Rand Swiss in Johannesburg. No David Shapiro at the moment. He might join us in a minute. We'll see. But Viv, I want to talk about tech earnings in the United States. We had some bad earnings. Well, they weren't bad, but they were less good, if you like, as the market expected, from Alphabet. What do you attribute this to? Is it because they're spending too much on research and development on artificial intelligence?
Well, I mean, we were talking about $75 billion. Microsoft is talking $80 billion in Azure. I think it's the same kind of number of $75 billion or so for Meta. It's pretty much known this is the kind of money you need to spend to be a part of this AI game, despite the stuff we've seen from DeepSeek. You know, the Chinese model that was supposedly trained for $6 million or so, which wasn't really the case. They're taking one item from DeepSeek and comparing it to an entire bill for a place like Amazon or a place like, you know, Apple or, you know, in this case, Alphabet. And that's not a fair comparison. But that being said, I do think the market is, to a certain extent, a bit nervous about some of these AI expenditures. This is by far the largest infrastructure spend of anything anywhere in history. Bigger than, for instance, those U.S. Space program, bigger than building the, you know, U.S. power grid or the highway system. You know, on a per-year basis, this is by far the biggest spend. And even one of these companies, like a Microsoft, is spending more in a given year than was taken to go to space in any given year. It is a huge amount of risk. That being said, Alphabet's results themselves were not looking that terrible. You know, if you look at, for instance, what's happening in YouTube, etc., it still looks reasonably good. And if you compare, like, for instance, YouTube to Netflix, which initially also came out with results, and the market tended to like that. You could argue that in terms of, like, eyeballs, in terms of the business model, YouTube actually has a better business model and bigger exposure than Netflix does. More people spend more time on YouTube than do on Netflix. And unlike Netflix, which has to go and pay up front for its content, YouTube only pays for the people that actually make content that people want to watch.
Okay. Just one question. Do you think that people, when I say people, I mean the companies, have the fear of missing out? In other words, they have to spend tens of billions in order to keep up in case they fall behind. Or do you think these vast amounts of money, in anyone's language, is justified?
Look, I mean, the price here is... I mean, people are not. I remember a couple of years ago, Vladimir Putin, said that first the country that controls AI controls the future, and that is literally what you're playing for here. You're playing for literally humanity's future. The country that gets to AI first, like artificial, you know, super intelligence or artificial intelligence, whatever you call it, that would have an advantage that is going to be almost insurmountable. Okay. How does that compare to basically spending money on, like, you know, search or spending money on, like, you know, video or whatever it may be? This is really something that's just spectacular. And what, people like end of last year were talking about the fact that, these models are hitting a peak. There's a wall in terms of capability. And some people still believe that to be true. But if you looked at the last, say, 2 months or so, there's a famous recent example, and it's in the New York Times, about a thing called humanity's last exam. So some people were saying that AI is getting so good so quickly that we aren't able to evaluate how good it is anymore because we can't ask the questions because we're too dumb to ask the questions that are going to test it to its ability. So they basically got some of the world's experts, physicists, biologists, chemists, you know, literary people, whatever it may be, and developed an exam that they thought was humanity's, like, you know, hardest exam ever. And, like, no human can score anything on this exam. You'd have to be, maybe a specialist might score one or two of the physics questions, right? But they wouldn't have any chance on the biology questions. And about 2 weeks ago, the best AI system was scoring around about 5%. This last week, the best AI system scored 20%+.
But isn't that cheating? Isn't that making... I mean, there's the whole argument, and it's a very, very corny argument. It's making you more lazy. But on the other hand, someone like David Shapiro, who's not with us today, would say, actually, no, it's making you think more. It's making you more aware of reality. Where do you stand on this one? I'm with the early camp. In other words, I believe that it is making you more lazy. And I'll tell you why. It's because I get messages from my son, and it's not the same son of a year ago. He's sending me messages with words that he would never normally use. He said the word agonising the other day, and I know he's never used that before. It's because he said, how do I send this message to my dad? I want to tell him this, this, this and this, and it comes up with something. I know it's AI generated. I'm a little bit sceptical still, even though I know in the future it will be the future.
Look, I mean, here's a couple of things. Firstly, the models are improving so quickly that like I said, the wall is definitely does not exist anymore, because the models are improving at a rate that's better than we thought they would be going at. And not just improving in terms of ability, improving in terms of cost. DeepSeek, like I said, exaggerates how cheap it is, but it's definitely cheaper than, you know, comparable models were at least like a couple of weeks ago. And I say a couple of weeks, almost like it's a couple of years. So that's the thing to note that. The next thing is that, you know, as a teaching device, students have been shown to have huge, huge improvements in ability if they are taught by AI systems, because the AI system is infinitely patient, able to go over answers, you know, multiple times. And so as a teaching device, and not just for like students at high school, I've seen like evidence that, you know, physicists, I mean, talking like people at PhD plus level, you know, it was like senior researchers out there. When you want to study an area of physics that's not quite the area, but close enough to the area, so you're talking at a very expert level, we'll go to AI and ask it questions. These models are able to teach you at the highest level, beyond what you get at a master's course, let me say, at a top university, in just about any field in the world, okay? So, yes, it can make you lazier, but if you were self-motivated, you now have the ability to learn anything you want to learn, being taught by what is equivalent to a world-class expert, you know, who's infinitely patient and we're able to do it whenever you want to do it. So you can be lazy, or you can basically take advantage of it to become exceptional.
Is this a good thing for the corporate world? Is it a good thing for the world outside the corporate world as well, the socioeconomic world? Is it beneficial that people can now become so clever, and if they've got the best AI app on their phone or on their laptop or whatever, they can do these things? Do you not think that it's starting to become slightly dystopian?
Look, I think that I personally, there's a thing called P-Doom, which is the probability of doom, effectively, the world ending, you know what I mean?
Yes.
And my P-Doom is not zero. And in fact, not only is my P doom not zero, if you look at AI experts around the world and you look at the guys that are optimistic, right?
Mm-hmm.
They have an average P doom. That means this thing destroys the world at about 10%. And these are the optimistic ones, right? The pessimistic ones have the chance of this thing destroying the world at like 99.9999%. You know what I mean? There's people out there who have studied this thing for years who don't just think this is, you know, a danger. They think that developing it is a guarantee that it ends everything. So there is definitely that dystopia. But until that happens, until we see that happen, there's going to be other dangers. You mentioned the fact of job losses. You mentioned the fact of, people, you know, being kind of getting lazy and stuff. To get into depth here, I don't want to get too technical, but there's three levels of training. The stuff that you think about when you talk about GPT, right, or GPT-4, you think of the first two levels. There's a third level that came out in the last little while, and that level is basically reinforcement learning, where you have a set outcome, like where you can have a definable outcome.
Yeah.
And that's what these new reasoning models are about. So people think, oh, this is just a stochastic parrot where it just reflects what's already being taught to it by some people's writing or whatever. That's the old school stuff. The old school, I mean, a few months ago. The newer stuff, basically, these reasoning models are using another level beyond that, which is basically reinforcement learning based on actual, like, you know, real-world examples. And if you think about what is things that are actually, you know, easily definable answers, like, you don't know if a painting is a good or bad painting just, you know, up front. Mm-hmm. But one thing you do know is a good or bad thing is how many Twitter followers do you have? Or how much money do you make? Or are you able to basically, you know, convince people to buy this product or not advertise to them? And there's a thing called character AI. I don't know if you've heard of that.
No.
It's an AI program that basically you can download it, where you can go talk to AI personas. The average, you know, period of time that people spend, a session they spend on this thing, is 2 hours. 2 hours periods. When last you talked to somebody besides me for 2 hours, Lindsay?
I don't think I've ever spoken to anyone for 2 hours in my whole life. Has she got a cat that comes in occasionally, a stray cat, and it sits on my lap and I talk to it while I'm watching television or reading a book or whatever, and that's a maximum 25 minutes. 2 hours? No, Viv. It's beyond the pale.
Average. On average, 2 hours. So that's probably there's people doing that, like 3, 4, 5 hours after that. But on average, the average timeline is 2 hours. And what I'm saying that is not so much it's, it's impressive. This thing is a machine that's basically designed to go after and hack anything that's definable. What's more definable than the amount of hours that you can spend on something? And so this thing is actually being trained to make sure you spend more and more time talking to it. It's almost like, you know, it was the world's ultimate
But why? Why is it, what do they get out of that? I mean, they're getting advertising revenue. Are they getting kudos? What do they get out of someone talking to it for 2 hours?
And stuff. I mean, I think it's a subscription service or whatever. And this is the most recent stuff. This is the older stuff. And you're going to be doing the same things. I mean, it's going to get, again, and not to be like, you know, too like, risque. There's a website called OnlyFans, right? Mm. And they basically have a subscription service like that. These ladies or men in some cases are using the same kind of thing to basically hack their clients. And again, the same process is working here where this thing is talking to you as if it's that particular person. And these people are basically spending, you know, tons of money just to talk to a robot that's basically figured out a way to hack into their minds to get them to spend more time and more money.
I don't want my mind to be hacked into, quite honestly. My mind is fine on its own. I mean, it could be better, but I don't want it to be hacked into. Viv, I'm just going to give you a couple of things here from a completely different world, which is things that get dug out of the ground. Anglo American Platinum today came out with its trading statement for the 12 months ended December, and the share price has fallen by 4%. Then I look at Kumba Iron Ore, part of the Anglo stable, came out with an update, down 3.6%. But Anglo-American PLC production report for the fourth quarter ended December. Okay, it's a quarterly one rather than a yearly one. Up 5.25%. I know it's not really your field, but you have to, I'm afraid I'm going to insist that you comment upon it. What do you make of South African companies or companies that are listed on the JSE that are digging things out of the ground? They're all over the place at the moment.
Yeah, look, I do think that, firstly, platinum is a sector you don't want to be in at the moment. I mean, you see what's happening with Waymo, already a driverless taxi operating in the wild in the U.S., taking market share away from places like Uber. And I think it went from 0 to like 22% market share, taking about 12% away from Uber and about 10% or so away from Lyft in a period of a year in San Francisco. That is an electric vehicle. All these driverless vehicles are going to be electric vehicles. Without the internal combustion engine, we're going to see a huge drop off in demand for platinum. It's almost, I always talk about it, think of it as almost expensive for oil. That's what it's used for primarily. And China is going to be just as bad, if not worse, in terms of what's happening there. So platinum, I would say, is an issue. With iron ore, we know what's happening with regards to the iron ore sector at the moment. Especially in China. But, with regards to, Anglos, copper is going to be hugely in demand. I would say copper is a big thing going forward. These electric vehicles are going to demand copper. If they get the robots going, which I am a lot more confident in the next 2 or 3 years, we're going to see the robots, coming into play in a bigger way than you would think. That requires copper. And of course, if you take in all these electric vehicles, electric robots, etc., doing their thing, electricity generation, transmission, all those factors are going to come into play. And again, copper is going to be hugely in demand. Looking at the situation globally, some of the reindustrialization happening around the world, I do think is going to affect demand for raw materials. And I think Anglos and other commodity producers are probably going to benefit from that in a very big way.
So you buy Anglos, the entity, rather than the subdivisions of it, i.e. Anglo-American Platinum.
I've honestly have a very strong opinion on any particular commodity. I prefer to buy the diversified miners because they almost are trading the commodities because they know more about what the commodity demand is than any individual stock. So unless I have a strong opinion about a particular commodity like gold or something, I tend to buy the diversified miners.
Okay, let's have a look at some markets now before we end our discussion on politics. So I want you to get your head around US politics just briefly while I give the market action. Dollar rand is 18.54, British pound against the rand 23.02, euro rand is 19.23, euro dollar is 103.70. Not much movement there. British pound 124.15. There's a bit of movement there with the pound falling by just about 0.5%. The gold price, which you mentioned, it's fallen. It's given up all of yesterday's gains. It's down $27 to $2,845. Record high yesterday, actually. If we look at other commodities and the all-important energy complex, we've got Brent crude oil down 0.3% to $74.39, and West Texas crude, $70.75 per barrel, also down around about 0.4%, excuse me, and not much else going on. The S&P 500, it's churning around 6,100. That's the futures market, which is up 0.2%. The US 10-year Treasury bond yield is 4.43%. The yield has been coming down over the last couple of days. The South African 10-year is 10.67%. Of course, we've got the State of the Nation address tonight. Maybe it'll be affected by what Ramaphosa says, but I doubt it. And Bitcoin is just below 98,000, down around about 0.4%. And if I give you a couple of indices here before we get on to politics, let's have a look now at the all share. All share on the JSE, 87,222, up 0.7%, and the top 40 up 0.9% at 79,274. And obviously components within that, but we need not go into them because it's been a fairly quiet day. Tell me about Donald Trump and his pronouncements, Viv. I was shocked over the last 36 hours. I would say that you, as a reasonable and intelligent man, would have been as well.
About what?
I suppose there's about five different subjects.
What was it?
Yeah, well, you know, the Gaza story is obviously the most shocking, standing next to Netanyahu. And Netanyahu, I don't know if the smile that he had on his face was this man's ridiculous or I'm so lucky that he's in the White House. I don't know what it was. But come on now.
Because Netanyahu is, next to Donald Trump, comes across as the reasonable person. Comes across as the dove, as the less warmongery. Yeah, that is true. Look, I mean, with Trump, I think the same thing that applied to the last term applies again, in that he's not an extremely competent person. He's very. I heard Van Jones, who's a very smart commentator from CNN, speak about it, and someone is saying, you know, how does Donald Trump get that? Donald Trump, understand, is probably smarter than you or me. How do I know that? He's the most powerful man in the world, and he achieved that the second time around. I can't do that. You can't do that. There's some talent there that is there. So let us ignore that fact. Is he good at actually running things? I don't think so. So he's very good at becoming president or politically and in a genius in a way that I am not. And 99.99% of the population is not. But he's not very competent when it comes to actually running things. The person that is competent at running things and has been proven to be so is Elon Musk. Today news came out that he's now, I think, doubled the profit of Twitter from before he bought it. Okay, he's an operator of note. And the thing that's really going to affect the U.S., I think, is what Musk is doing and not so much what Trump is doing. Because Trump with the tariffs had the tariffs the weekend and then had them taken away, you know, a couple hours after the market opened on this week. So he's back and forth. He doesn't really push anything forward. There's no real change. It's going to be like build the wall. It's going to be like, you know, the Muslim ban. It's going to be like what's happened with regards to birthright citizenship. He'll push some stuff through. Some of it might or might not go through. That it doesn't really matter. Elon Musk is going to end the Department of Education. Elon Musk has ended the US AID. Elon Musk is changing the way the US does its payment system, and he's going to revolutionize it. That, I think, is the real story here. I don't know if you hear the story about what he's done with the US payment system. Okay, so.
Well, I know that he's taken over the personal details of many, many thousands of people. Actually, millions of people. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. I mean, you seem to think that it's a good thing. You seem to be on the Musk side.
I don't think it's a good thing or a bad thing. I think it's going to be done. I think that's the difference between Musk and Trump. Trump will say stuff and not get it done. Musk is going to do stuff. Whether it's a good or bad thing, understand it's going to be done. But what he did, he brought in a 19-year-old, one died. Okay.
There's six of them between 19 and 24 years old. And they're not even they're college graduates. They're high school graduates, Viv.
Yeah, high school graduates. So, and you would think, okay, that's ridiculous. But understand, like, people between the ages of 19 and 24 have done most of the big things in the world, including, like, conquer the world with Alexander the Great, including, I think the average age of the person that put people on the moon was, like, 27 years old. So he's putting young, very smart people in there. Whether or not, I mean, USAID, taking that out, the PEPFAR thing, as a South African, is a disaster for that to have been temporarily even suspended. There's people whose lives depend on USAID, okay? It's a bad thing. But is it going to actually be done at the end? Yes, because Musk operates, you know, efficiently and operates competently. Maybe not for the best ends, but he's going to do it. I think that's the difference. And I think the U.S. Department of Education is probably going to go next, and along with a number of other divisions.
The CIA, every single person at the CIA, many people which are responsible for the security of the United States of America and therefore, by association, the world, have been offered an eight-month severance package if they sign the form by, I think, close of business tonight or tomorrow. What is that?
Yeah.
And the FBI as well. Well, not so much the FBI. That's a different story because of January the 6th. But how can you get rid of the CIA? That is wrong to me.
It's all federal agencies, all federal employees across the entire U.S. So if you were a federal employee in the U.S., I think they did it even for the traffic controllers, which I think after the last week was not a good idea, and I think they've rescinded that one. So at a traffic controller, you can't leave. But if you work in any other federal department, you can basically get out with an eight-month package. And, you know, the threat is get out now with 8 months of pay or get out maybe in a month or two's time with nothing, you know. And that's the case there. It's not just the CIA, it's every single federal agency with a couple small exceptions. The FBI thing, I think, is even more significant because in the FBI, I think around about a third of the FBI or 40% of the FBI's total workforce were in some way or another involved in the January 6th prosecutions. If he gets rid of all of them, he's getting rid of 40% of the workforce of the FBI. That is pretty significant. And the people that he's putting in charge, the difference between this generation, this term and the last term is not Trump. Trump's the same person. It's just that people last time around who want to change things spotted Trump and said, if we get in power with Trump, we could actually change things. And the people he's bringing along with him, unlike the last time around, are in many cases much more competent and much more driven, much more ideologically driven. And what's going to happen is not what Trump says, it's what the people he brings across are going to do. And I think that's the difference. And Musk is just one of them. But I think a number of the other people he's brought across are going to change the way the U.S. operates. And this is, I think, going to be the most significant presidency in the U.S. Since FDR, which is like almost 100 years ago.
You say significant. Yeah. You don't say good or bad.
No, I'm saying it's significant. I'm not saying good or bad. I think it's likely this much change happening very quickly. No one, even if you have 1,000 IQ and the greatest heart in the world, is going to be able to pull it off without significant negative consequences. It's too complicated a machine. It's too difficult to understand how it all works and what the implications are. So this amount of change is going to cause negative consequences. How bad, I don't know exactly. But it is going to change the way the U.S. after Donald Trump and before Donald Trump is going to be the U.S. before and after FDR. FDR, for those that don't know, significantly changed the way the U.S. works. Social Security, et cetera, were all implemented under FDR. The New Deal in the U.S. was all under FDR. And that's what Trump is going to do. He's going to change the U.S. for the next century. The most important...
Gosh, Viv, I can't believe this. I mean, a change for the next century. That's quite a statement.
Yeah, I mean, you don't destroy things like the way the system. He's going to change the payment system in the U.S. They're not going to go back to the old system once it's done. He's going to change things like DEI and stuff in universities. He's going to outlaw things. He's going to do executive orders that are going to change things. You already see Google and Facebook come out and eliminate the DEI department.
They have to because they've been told to do so by Trump at the inauguration or in the drinks after the inauguration. Yeah.
It's going to take you, it's going to take you many, many more years to ever bring those things back to the level they were before Trump. Okay, it's going to change the Department of Education to reinstate that after 4 years, maybe after 8 or 10 years, 12 years, if Vance becomes the president after this year, that's going to change the way the U.S. works. This kind of like fundamental change, it's very difficult to build up these institutions again after they've been destroyed. And so I do think these FBI agents that are fired, they can't come back after 4 years and get back into their jobs the way they were.
I think you're seeing here is something that could be accidental brilliance via Donald Trump, or it could be a complete and utter disaster. I wonder which one it will be. If we are speaking in 3 and 3/4 years' time, Viv, I wonder who'll win. Do you think he'll win? Do you think it'll be a change maker for a century? Or do you think it'll be a change maker for a century which is has plunged the world into darkness?
Look, I think some of the things he's done, like, for instance, USAID, which is this the organization that basically does things like feed people, but also, you know, promotes U.S. values across the world, etc. It's a $50 billion a year enterprise. There's lives that depend on it in Africa. And I'm not saying that, like, you know, flippantly. You take that away without thinking about it properly, which these guys cannot think about properly because it's going to happen too quickly. And you will not have one or two people die. You will have
millions.
Hundreds of thousands. Or millions die. Okay. That's the kind of thing. When you change the FBI, you take maybe a quarter of the FBI to 40% of the FBI out. When you go and offer this many people, I think there's already 40,000 people that have taken the deal with regards to the federal agencies for early retirement, and probably more by the end of the period. We take that many people out of these institutions, and you take away things like the Department of Education. Yes, there are arguments that the Department of Education is not exactly what you think it is, but it does do good things like the Pell Grants and whatnot, and you know promote you know education for poorer people and so on. You do all these things here, you won't know the outcome in 3.5 years. You'll know the outcome in 30 years' time when you see what the full impact is going to be. And that is the impact it's going to have. Obama's presidency, Biden's presidency, George W. Bush's presidency, they had momentary impacts, but they weren't changing the fundamental structure of the country. Trump, not through his own things here, because he's been used as a tool for by people like Musk and so on, is going to have an impact that's going to last decades. And we will only know the outcome decades from now.
Maybe even months from now. Who knows? Viv, thank you very much for your always incredible insight. Viv Govender is from RAND Swiss in Johannesburg. And that was the 5 o'clock shadow. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.